welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive knowledge showcase starring some of the geniuses that make the YouTube series SciShow happen. Today, as always, I am joined by Stefan Chin.
Yo.
What's your tagline?
Some hot sauces are too damn hot.
I agree. Sam Schultz is also here.
Hey.
Sam, what's your tagline?
Skeleton bones.
That's a little redundant.
Okay, I guess not. Like, a bone can be, if you just, like, took my leg.
It's bones.
I don't make value judgments on any of your catchphrases. So.
Sorry. Sari Riley is here as well. Sari, what's your tagline?
Wet egg bad.
I actually think a wet egg's fine.
Depends.
I'm
wow,
making a value
now you guys are
here.
Judging Sari's
yeah.
tagline.
A dry egg sounds horrible.
I got mayo on a sandwich when I asked for no mayo. That's like the specific wet egg that I don't like.
Everybody likes mayo though.
Yeah.
No, lots of people don't and I don't get it.
It's so weird.
It's just like if mayo has a seasoning in it, then it's fine. But if it's just
It's an aioli.
Yeah.
If it's an aioli, yes. It's crossed the line to fine. But if it's just mayo, then it's goopy. It's taking up space on my sandwich. It makes it taste slimy and bad.
Oh, agree to disagree.
And I'm Hank Green. My tagline is Motion Picture Association of America.
Wow.
This podcast is very PG-13. Every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts. We play for glory. We also keep score with Sam Bucks. We do everything we can to stay on topic, but if you go on a tangent, which you probably will, we can deem whether it is worthy or not and dock you a Sam Buck if it's not. Now, as always, we introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem, this week from Sari.
From a tender age, I loved a tender. That warm and crispy, crunchy treat, a fast food splendor. Mm-hmm. That bite-sized chicken meat, no matter the vendor, whether round or long or dinosaur, meat glued or carefully prepared for me, it matters not what I shove in my gob. I'm not a snob. Each nugget I eat, I dream of more.
Ooh. I thought it was going to be, each nugget I eat, I dream of meat. Because that's the topic of today.
That would have been good.
That would have been better.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, I do love a chicken nugget or a chicken tender or any fried chicken.
Do you feel silly when you order chicken strips at a restaurant?
Hell no.
You know, it sometimes if it's a place that it's like, here's the menu and here's the kids section, chicken tenders. Yeah. And I'm like, but if you got them for the kids,
you got them
for the grown up.
Yep. Yeah.
It's my constitutional right to chicken strips.
Sari, what's meat?
It's flesh.
Yeah, so but edible. For eating.
Yeah.
Not edible.
For
it's
eating?
For eating.
Well, is it still meat when it's on my bone and I'm alive?
Alive?
And I'm moving.
Oh, you're in, you're alive?
Yeah.
Like, do you look out at a pasture of cows and be like, meat?
Not really.
No,
and when I
cows.
Google bodybuilding photos, I might say he looks meaty. But I don't think of his, you know.
What a big beefy boy.
And your like well-developed calves look very steak-like, but I still I don't think of it as meat.
I don't think of it as meat, but that doesn't mean it's not meat.
So what's meat?
That's what I'm saying. It's just like edible flesh. But also within like the umbrella of meat, there's dark meat and light meat, which are different kinds of muscle. There are variety meats or offal, which are the entrails and internal organs. There's lab-grown meat, which is like muscle tissue that people just grow in petri dishes. Like
you could eat something that is still alive when you eat it, too.
Yeah,
right?
You could.
So
you
is it meat the minute what?
It passes your lips. Yeah, I think that's it.
Do bugs have meat?
Yeah, they got meat.
Bugs meat?
A bug's meat?
A bug's meat. You can tell with words like meat and flesh that they're just sort of an era. Mm. Flesh is definitely, I looked it up, it's very German, but it sounds very German. Flesh.
Meat is also European-ish, but Middle English, Meta, Dutch, meaning food, nourishment, sustenance. But it also, in Middle English, meant any sort of food. So, vegetables were called green meat. And white meat was a dairy food or product. So, everything was meat.
That's basically Arby's. Do you want some white meat on your meat?
Yeah.
With some bread meat?
You can have some clear meat. That's water.
So meat is defined purely basically by the fact that it is food. There is no other non-colloquial way to talk about meat.
I don't think so. I think it because it is defined by its relationship to and usefulness to humans.
Right. Apologies to the vegetarians today.
We might be reinforcing that they want to be vegetarians too.
Right, and maybe convincing some other people.
Because meat's pretty gross.
It's super gross. Mm-hmm. You think about it objectively and it's like, we need to stop this.
Uh-huh.
It's bad in all kinds of different
take
ways.
Take up space, treat animals horribly.
That's right.
What was the first meat? A fish, right? Is that right, though?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Like the first, what does like, that mean? Like the thing, first thing a person
that had
ate?
Fleshy.
But if an animal eats another animal, they're eating meat, right?
Yeah, that's okay. True.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess what was the first thing that ate?
To eat.
Where does that line get crossed? You have to have bones for there to
eat. Yeah, if I just swallow some bacteria, is that meat?
Bacteria is not an animal, is it?
I mean,
so I guess it was the first, whatever the first multicellular organism was.
Was the first meat?
No, because it's probably a plant.
Ugh.
My bad. Write to us on Twitter. What do you think the first meat was? And now it's time for Trivia Fail. One of our panelists has prepared 3 science facts for our education and enjoyment, but 2 of those facts are big old stinking fakes. The other panelists have to figure out which is the true fact, and if we do, we get a sandbuck. If not, then Sam gets the sandbuck, because it's Sam this week. Tell me your facts.
First, a little story.
Okay, first tell me a little story.
The New York-based scientific society, the Explorers Club, held a dinner in 1951 during which mammoth meat was allegedly served.
I heard about
that. A member who couldn't attend the dinner had a friend steal a chunk of the meat so it could be displayed in a museum. In 2006, a couple of Yale students tested the DNA of that meat and found that it was actually green sea turtle meat, and that the guy who provided the mammoth meat in 1951 was lying about it being mammoth meat.
So that is true.
Yes, that is true. There has been, however, at least one example of scientists eating an ancient preserved animal. So, which one of these is it?
Oh my God, scientists, stop.
Number
everyone's reputation is on the line.
A 36,000-year-old frozen bison cooked into a bison stew. A 42,000-year-old frozen foal, its shank braised and seasoned with wild herbs. Or number 3, a 2,000-year-old mummified crocodile, its salt-preserved meat eaten like jerky.
They didn't preserve it. It was preserved 2,000 years
found
ago.
Found mummified.
Preserved.
Still, yes.
And they were
yes.
just like, let's taste this.
Why not? We got too many of these crocodiles. Let's crack one open.
One of these was an actual meat eaten by scientists, a 36,000-year-old frozen bison in a stew, a 42,000-year-old frozen foal braised with wild herbs, or a 2,000-year-old mummified crocodile that was salt-preserved, so it was just eaten the way that it was.
Yeah.
They didn't have to prepare it at all. They were just like, brush off the dirt.
Still good.
Jerky.
So I like this wild herbs thing because this feels like what they do. They'd be like, how would you cook a foal if you were a 42,000-year-old bog man?
That is how scientists talk.
I hope they don't listen.
Same with the stew where it's just I don't know, boil it.
If you're going to cook old-ass meat, stew's the way to do it.
That's right.
But braising something is a form of boiling it, also in a way.
Is braising
boiling? You simmer it in a sauce.
Oh.
Did they have sauce 30-whatever thousand years ago?
Yeah, sauce is a natural byproduct, occasionally.
Yeah, sauce happens. You heat meat up.
Sauce happens?
There's nothing to go on here. It feels like all these are equally possible.
They found honey that's lasted 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know if jerky. I mean,
I think it could. Like, if you are making something unpalatable to microorganisms, that is one way of it not degrading.
But if it's
over that
unpalatable to microorganisms,
kinds of things are unpalatable to microorganisms.
Okay,
pickles.
But you can't eat a mummy. Can you eat a mummy?
Somebody ate a mummy, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Mummy eating was a thing in the Victorian.
Yeah, you're right. It was like a medicine.
No.
Right, they grind it up and put it on their plank steaks. Oh. I said plank steak, so I just want to say I don't know that that's a thing.
Plank steaks are just the wood that they ate back in the Victorian age.
Yeah, we have plank steaks because we're really hungry.
Yeah, we're too
wood
poor
meat.
For plank steaks. Yeah.
Tree meat.
I'm going to guess the jerky one because one of my favorite things is bog butter, which is like butter that they would bury in bogs and lasted for hundreds of years because it's
basically
wet and
mayonnaise.
Cold. I would not eat it. Well, no, I like butter. I don't like mayonnaise.
Yeah, but bog butter is not butter.
It's not the butter that you know
it's
and love.
Rancid.
Yeah. It's been through a process. I'm going to go. So I like, so these two first ones are frozen.
Yeah.
And I just don't know that there would be a frozen horse 42,000 years ago. I know that there were horses back then, and I know they probably lived in places that froze, but not like for a long, long. I feel like bison have a better chance of being frozen for a long time. So I'm going to say bison.
Okay.
Oh. I'm just going with my gut, my first instinct. Stew's the way to do. Uh-huh. My answer is number one.
Okay. So we've got two bison and one crocodile.
It was the bison.
Yes! Oh, God. Okay. Oh, nervous making.
Blue Babe was the name of the bison.
You didn't have to name the bison that you ate.
Blue Babe was a steppe bison discovered in Alaska in 1979. He had been killed quickly by a lion and insta-frozen, is what they think had happened somehow. While he was buried, his skin was covered with blue Vivianite crystals, so that's why they call them Blue Babe, because he was blue. And in 1984, as the team of scientists that were prepping him for a display at the University of Alaska were finishing up, they noticed that they had some chunks of meat left that they were still frozen after they found it. And so the last night that they were working on him, they had a party where they made steppe bison stew with vegetables in it, and it reportedly tasted okay, but a lot like dirt, so they didn't finish the pot of stew.
Oh, no. You didn't finish the stew?
Oh, come on.
The foal, they did find a frozen foal in 2019. He was preserved so well that they could extract liquid blood and urine from it. It was 42,000 years old, the oldest liquid blood sample ever. And they found it in Siberia, and they're trying to clone it, but they're not doing a good job.
And they're not eating it.
They didn't eat it.
Yeah, as far as we know.
They might find some chunks left over afterward.
Or make blood pudding or whatever.
That's true, yeah. A meringue.
Blood aioli.
And then the alligator thing, ancient Egyptians mummified all kinds of stuff, including alligators. And some of the alligator mummies have, like, their last meals in their belly. Nobody's ever eaten one of them, though. But they found 2,000-year-old beef jerky in China in 2012. Ooh. But it was really nasty, and they didn't try to eat it.
Well, how did they know it was nasty if they didn't
try to
eat it?
That's true. I don't know.
Well, how do you tell if something is nasty? Like, have you ever opened the fridge and been like, this was a bad... this isn't food anymore.
Well, that's my facts.
That was very good, Sam. Thank you.
Old meat.
Next up, we're going to take a short break, and then the fact off. Welcome back, everybody. Sambuck Totals is very easy to report that we are all tied with exactly one.
That's nice.
But Stefan and I have a chance to rack some points up.
Oh, God. Okay.
That was like a vocal dab.
Sometimes mispronouncing words is funny, and sometimes it's a vocal dab.
It's like, ooh, you're 40. So get ready now for the fact off. Two panelists have brought in science facts to present to the others in an attempt to blow their minds. And you, presentees, each have a Sambuck to award to the fact that you like the most. And it is me versus Stefan. We're going to decide who goes first with the following question. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, which is the most widely eaten meat in the world, accounting for 36% of world meat intake? Ooh. We want to go on three?
Okay.
One, two, three.
Cows?
Goats.
You're both wrong.
Chickens. Sheep? Fish?
There's another animal.
There's
you're
another
missing.
Animal?
Pigs.
Yeah.
Like, there's no more animals. It's all of them.
Human flesh. Oh, pigs. Well, good for them. I guess not, actually.
They would disagree, yeah.
Definitely bad for them. So, I guess I will just go ahead and go second. Okay, you go.
Okay. So, my fact today is about animals that eat meat. You might know what they're called.
Uh-huh.
Herbivores.
What?
So, apparently, classifications of animals mean absolutely nothing. I mean, they do mean something. So, herbivores generally are animals that have physical adaptations that allow them to eat and digest plant matter. So, specialized teeth or specialized stomachs, those kinds of things. But while they primarily eat plant matter, that doesn't mean that they only eat plants. Mm-hmm. We've observed a number of species eating meat or other animal products. And there are a bunch of videos that have made the rounds online line of like a deer eating a baby bird or a cow just like straight up nomming on a baby chicken. So it's kind of disturbing.
I laughed.
You saw these videos?
No, but just like the just idea the thought of them.
Yeah, okay. It just is like hilarious to think of a cow just being like, welp. Yeah.
Or like eating grass and then it just doesn't stop.
Yeah, it's just like, whoop. But there's also been some research into this. So one team had cameras set up in Canada, I think for a different reason, but they had observed snowshoe hares scavenging meat. And so they intentionally, quote, deployed carcasses. So they put 161 carcasses around Canada.
Deploy the carcass!
And they found that the hares had scavenged about 12.4% of them from a variety of different species, including other hares. So they were not above eating their own species.
Yeah, sure.
And they ate lynx meat, which is their main predator. And they were also seen eating grouse feathers. I assume, like, intentionally, not just, like, as a byproduct of sticking your head inside the carcasses of a grouse. Mm-hmm. And they think that maybe they were just trying to get protein from that, but I don't know. And another study in North Dakota had cameras set up watching bird nests and had seen a bunch of different predators stealing eggs and whatnot from the nests. But they said that white-tailed deer put some other predators to shame with how much they were raiding these nests for eggs and grabbing baby birds right out of the nests.
No!
Put your nests higher up. The deer can't climb trees.
Yeah, use your wings, birds. Come on. So scientists think this might just be happening because of how hard it is to find food in the winter, so like just general food scarcity. Or in the deer's case, they might be looking for specific nutrients to help grow their antlers. I guess they've also seen like a lot of deer gnawing on different bones. Mm-hmm. But it seems to happen pretty frequently, and it could just be a thing that many herbivores occasionally do because there's an opportunity to do it, and why not get some extra calories?
It's much easier to get calories from meat than from like grass. Like grass, you need special adaptations. Like a lion can't get, or a human can't get energy from grass.
Right.
But like proteins are part of what you're digesting when you're digesting plant matter. And they're not that different in meat than they are in plants. It's just that they're a little bit cuter.
They did point out that like deer, like because of the teeth adapted for eating plants, like they can't get through skin very well.
Oh.
So that's like
gotta go
maybe if
the
they
defenseless things.
Yeah. Or just scavenging corpses or stuff. Maybe if deer had some teeth, they'd be attacking. That could be fun.
Well, I'm sure that's how carnivores happened. There were some deer and then there was one that was like, my teeth are pretty sharp. I should go ahead and eat Jeff.
Do they know anything about like the gut bacteria? Because I imagine that eating corpses is not the most pleasant thing for the tum.
I don't know. It was mostly the hares that I saw that were eating, that were scavenging from the corpses. And all the other things that I saw were about like various things eating live small birds mostly.
Yeah.
So it was like very fresh.
Rabbits are not rodents, right?
They're lagomorphs, which is close to a rodent.
Because they like eat their babies too sometimes, don't they?
What? Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of rodents do that where it's like, well.
But I guess a lot of rodents are also like not necessarily just vegetarian or whatever.
Correct. Yeah.
Do we just classify rabbits? Is that too quick, you think? Or
it just seems like almost any herbivore will be a carnivore. Will like eat meat sometimes when given the opportunity. It's just hard to get meat usually.
Right. But like you said, it seems like, Sari said, it seems like they would maybe suffer the same fate that we do when we eat raw meat. Like there would just be something wrong in there.
Well, but not if you have it real fresh.
Yeah, I guess you're right. What's that, tartar or something like that? Yeah.
Okay, everybody. So salmon, what's...
It's a fish.
It's a fish, but it's also a color.
Oh.
Pink.
And salmon is so connected with the color pink that if salmon is not pink or pink enough, people will be less interested in purchasing it. Now, it turns out that salmon become pink because of their diet of krill and shrimp. So these krill and shrimp have pigments called carotenoids, which carrots also have, which is why they're called carotenoids, particularly the red-orange pigment astaxanthin. But most of our salmon now, if you go to the store, comes from farms. It's not wild-caught. And those do not eat krill. They eat kibble that's made of mashed up fish and chicken fat and a bunch of other stuff that they put into pellets and then they put it in there and that's what they eat. And if they just ate the kibble without anything in there, the meat would be white-ish a little bit pink because they're like a big, strong fish, mm-hmm. but definitely not like the pink of salmon. And what they find is that people do not like to shop for white salmon. So as much as 15 to 20% of a salmon farmer's food budget goes to astaxanthin that is added to their food. So that astaxanthin supplement can come from two places. It can come from ground up shrimp, or it can be synthesized. So you take petrochemicals and you do science to it and you make astaxanthin and then you put that into the salmon feed. The people who make astaxanthin have, of course, done a bunch of studies to figure out how much a variety of pinkness is worth to the average consumer. And so they actually have a tool called the Salmo Fan. That's like, it's like the, you know, like the color swatches that you get when you're painting your room.
Yeah.
And you hold it up. It's like a fan and you fan it out and you hold it up to the salmon and you can like see where on the pinkness scale this salmon falls.
Oh,
and if it's like below a 26, people will not buy it at any price.
Okay. And but then, it like, is functionally tastes exactly.
It's the same. Now, there might be some health benefits to astaxanthin, but like it's very minimal. This and it doesn't change the taste at all. It is just about the color. And even when told that it's just about the color, people will not buy salmon that is not pink, except that there is a species of salmon, the king salmon, that occasionally has a mutation and it makes it a white king. So 5% of wild Alaskan king salmon aren't able to process the pigments, and that makes them white. And so these were popular with natives because they were rare. And they were like, this is like a cool, like we caught a special one. But for a long time, they were sold for a lot less because people, there was this like pink thing. But now people have like caught on that they're special. So wild white salmon are worth more now, whereas farmed white salmon are unmentionably bad to the point where they spend tons of money basically dyeing the salmon pink from the inside.
Humans are so dumb.
Like, I think I would do I would be more inclined to buy pink salmon. I don't give a shit about salmon. Who has conditioned me to care so much about this?
I don't. It's just what salmon is. Like, salmon is pink.
Yeah.
There's a color in the Crayola crayon box called salmon.
Yeah.
I did know about the color thing, that they added color to farm-raised salmon, because I used to, once upon a time, worked in a meat department.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And that was a fact that came up.
You should have told us what meat was at the beginning.
Yeah.
No, yeah, so you have meat expertise.
Meat and music. Those are the things you know.
These are the two things. I thought I had a false sense of security going into research for this episode because I was like, I worked in a meat department. I know something about meat. This is going to be easy. And then I had such a hard time finding things. Caitlin called it classic meat department swagger.
But I read a little bit about the same thing happening just with regular cuts of meat. Like, they put a chemical into, is this true? They put a chemical in with the, when they air seal the meat to keep it pink
longer.
Yeah,
carbon monoxide.
Even though it doesn't matter if it's not pink, like.
Right.
But people won't buy it once it's even a little bit
looking fresh.
Pink.
Yeah.
Right.
You can treat kind of sad looking meat with carbon monoxide and then it freshens it right up.
That sounded not true to me because I can't picture a grocery store having a bunch of carbon monoxide.
It wouldn't happen
I guess
in
it
when
you
store.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah.
So we've got herbivores that are eating meat and we've got dying fish pink from the inside. Are you guys ready to cast your votes?
Mm-hmm.
3, 2, 1.
Hank.
Hey, I'm coming back, boys.
Sorry, Steph.
That's okay.
I knew about the deers already, though.
Mm, yeah.
Hmm.
I hadn't yet pictured a cow grazing along and hitting a chick and just being like, yes, thank you.
There was one report of a cow in India that ate like 48 chicks that someone had observed. Just kept going.
Farm animals need to all be friends with each other.
Yeah. Have you read Animal Farm?
Yeah, it's a bad book.
And now it's time to ask the science couch. We've got a listener question for our couch of finely honed scientific minds. It's from @TimRobinson21, who asks, why do wild animals taste gamey while farm animals do not? I have no idea what gamey even means. I've eaten plenty of wild so harvested animals, but they've all tasted good to me.
Well, but they taste different.
They taste different than farm animals, yeah. Do they?
I don't know. But so do like different animals. Like a cow tastes different from a pig, tastes different from a chicken. Frogs taste different from gatorsI'm from Florida.
That's very Florida. When I was in Florida, I had the option to have like gator strips or something, but they were more expensive than chicken strips and did not sound appetizing.
Yeah, they're worse.
Anyway, gamey, I haven't tasted it either, but it's described as more metallic or livery or like there's like a qualitative taste difference between wild animals, which is like bitter or sour or like not bland.
Right.
And then bland farm animals.
You saying that those animals all taste differently, there is a quality of any wild meat that I've eaten that is not something I've ever tasted in any kind of farmed meat, which is just like metallic flavor.
But like if you had, because normally it's like you're looking at like an animal that we don't have domestic versions of, right? Like, are there comparisons between like a wild cow and a domestic cow?
Right.
Yes. Because there's like grass-fed beef versus grain-fed beef, and there are qualitative differences between those meat according to people who taste meat and have those refined tastes.
So is it about their diet? Like, because we're just like feed boring sugar to all of these animals that we farm?
So the real reason, as with any sort of smell or taste, is chemicals. So part of that is from what they eat. Because what they eat goes into the fatty acids, and like the fat is the specific like flavor compound of the flesh. So more grain-fed cows have oleic, linoleic, and omega-6 fatty acids. So those are fatty acids that are polyunsaturated, so they have double bonds with them. And then specifically, there is a double bond 6 atoms away from the methyl group. This is interesting to chemists only. I thought this was wild. And then we were like, omega-3 means something besides just like mystic fish oil. It actually means you have information about the chemical structure. But then in grass-fed beef or other gamey meats, there is specifically higher alpha-linolenic acid, which across lots of studies like of African animals that have been eaten and cows and other things contributes to a gamey or fishy or grassy, that sort of like weird
flavor.
Which is mostly just perceived as weird because we're used to so many farmed animals. So it's partially diet. It's partially just like the amount of exercise they get. So like dark meat is described as more gamey than light meat. And so wild animals are more gamey than domestic animals just because they move around more. And so they have more myoglobin, I think.
And I imagine the muscles are more vasculated.
Yeah. And they have less intramuscular fat. So in grain-fed beef or in domesticated animals, there's more fat throughout their body, which makes it more tender. And then there's less in wild animals, which makes it a little bit tougher to eat. And then there's some evidence that like the stress can affect it as well. So in cows, I think they've noticed dark cutting meat, which are like darker than dark meat, which changes the flavor to be more sour and bitter.
So they live stressful lives?
Or like if you stress them out before they die, like if they're like living their life grazing in pastures and then you like shove them into a dark space or like scare them. I don't know how you scare a cow.
Well, I mean, you probably shove in.
Imagine going into a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty scary. Meat literature, very few and far between.
There's a niche?
Yeah,
it's a very niche. Yeah, because that was all about taste and a lot of it is really subjective. In a couple review articles that I read, no literature is available on volatile aroma compounds, so like smell of gamey. We don't know why some meat smells gamey and why some chemicals, but like which ones?
Jeez, just put it through the GC-mass spec.
Yeah.
Come on.
No one's doing it.
We need to know about meat smells.
We need to do some science. Feels like it would be pretty easy to do here in Montana where there's meat all over.
There's probably a lot of scientists who hunt.
Like I read blogs of hunters to do research on this, and it was very weird. It was like an alternate universe of people who do things to meat that that sounds bad.
That you haven't done.
That I haven't done. Yes, because I consume largely farm animal meat and I'm trying to consume less meat. This is where I found the most anecdotal evidence and the least scientific papers, which makes sense, I think, but maybe Montana scientists can do it. Like, the preparation of the meat has a lot to do with its gaminess. And from what I could tell is that there's something that you're supposed to do when you hunt to, like, put the corpse immediately, like, on cold stuff, like, to immediately cool it down or immediately treat it in some way.
Right.
Like, field dressing is what I saw it called.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And depending on how well you do that and, like, what you do can that influence the gaminess of the meat. Uh-huh. And so, like, before we had good mass refrigeration techniques and things like that, or if even if you just don't do this, gaminess is associated with spoiling. So some lipid oxidation happens during cooking, but some happens when it's just, like, sitting there, and it can make a sour or, like, more tender but more sour meat.
Yeah. If you want to ask the science couch, follow us on Twitter at @SciShowTangents, where we'll tweet out the topics for upcoming episodes every week. Thank you to @NewsWithPew, @MisplacedVulcan, and everybody else who tweeted us your questions this week.
That's a good name this time.
Yeah. Sam Book, final scores. Sari, Sam, and Stefan are tied with 1. I have 3.
Whoa.
Which is good because I was...
You were tied with me.
Tied with you.
Now you're not anymore.
Yeah. If you like this show and you want to help us out, you can do that in a bunch of ways. You can leave us a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show. Also, it's good for those iTunes charts, I think, maybe.
I think it's the only thing that's good for them. Review, please.
And if you can also leave your topic ideas for future episodes there. Second, you can tweet out your favorite moment from this episode or tell us what was the first meet. And if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I have been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
I've been Stefan Chin.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is a co-production of Complexly and the wonderful team at WNYC Studios. It's created by all of us and produced by Caitlin Hoffmeister and Sam Schultz, who also edits a lot of these episodes along with Hiroko Matsushima. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our social media organizer is Victoria Bongiorno. And we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. The cut of meat called pork butt or Boston butt is not actually butt.
Oh,
it's shoulder.
Shoulder.
Oh, come on.
Why did they name it that?
Old meat department over here.
We don't really know. The name is kind of a mystery. Mental Floss says butchers used to cut off shoulders, which were less prized cuts, pack them into barrels called butts, which is how they got their name. But it could also just be using butt more generically as a big chunk of something.
It's like a bit. But with a U. Like, a bit is a little bit. A butt is a lot.
It's like a roundish protrusion.
Yeah.
Well, the shoulder is kind of the butt of the
arm. Don't start this kind of thing.